song, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today, we tell you about the UN Weather Agency's latest warning about rising worldwide temperatures. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's technology report. We close with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, the United Nations Weather Agency reports that world temperatures are likely to reach dangerous levels within the next 5 years. The World Meteorological Organization, or WMO, released a report on the subject Wednesday. It said the 1.5 degree Celsius rise in temperatures might be temporary. But the agency noted such a rise would break the limit sought by the 2015 Paris Climate Agreement. In 2018, scientists said a temperature increase past 1.5 degrees Celsius would result in death, damage, and destruction to the world's ecosystems. After the 2015 Paris meeting, most nations agreed to try to limit the burning of coal, oil, and gas to prevent a temperature increase. The new WMO report says the use of those fuels, combined with the weather condition called El Niño, will push temperatures to a dangerous level. Adam Scaife is a weather forecaster in Britain who worked on the report. He said last year the WMO said there was a 50% chance temperatures would increase by 1.5 degrees by the year 2027. This year, the new report says that probability is greater, at 66%. Scientists from 11 different climate centers around the world produced the report. The increase in temperatures is important, but it may be brief, scientists say. Report co-writer Leon Hermanson is a climate scientist in Britain. He said the report is more of a barometer of how we are getting close, and that the more times the world's temperatures go above the dangerous level, the closer it gets to staying there. But climate scientists said they do not believe the world's temperatures will pass the 1.5 degree mark for good until the 2030s. Petri Tallis is the WMO Secretary General. The experts, he said, are sounding the alarm. The report, he added, does not mean that we will permanently exceed the 1.5 Celsius level specified in the Paris Agreement. Zeke Hausfather is a climate scientist based in California who did not work on the report. He agreed that it is not likely the long-term average would pass 1.5 degrees Celsius until the early to mid-2030s. The WMO report also said there is a 98% chance that one of the next 5 years will be the hottest on record. The last year that produced an extreme increase was 2016, when temperatures went up by 1.3 degrees Celsius. The scientists noted that a weather pattern called La Niña over the last 3 years produced cooler temperatures. The cooler weather made it harder to see the human contribution to the planet's temperatures. The experts are concerned about the coming El Niño period. Where there were floods before, there will be droughts, Hermansen said. And where there were droughts, there might be floods. Scientists said the Amazon may be drier than usual, and the Sahel area of Africa may be wetter. That is one of the pieces of good news from the report. It's not all doom and gloom and heat waves, Hermansen said. Another climate scientist who did not work on the report is Michael Mann of the University of Pennsylvania. He said reports like the one from the WMO are too concerned about surface temperatures. Instead, he said, scientists should be worried about the deep waters of the oceans. That is the part of the Earth that is most affected by human-caused warming.
The risk of misinformation influencing voters has long existed during elections around the world. But political experts warn that new artificial intelligence, AI, tools may create even more problems during the 2024 American presidential election. Newly released AI tools are widely available at no cost to the public. Such tools can be used to present voters with false or fake information in an effort to help candidates, experts say. Misinformation can take many forms, including fake news stories that seem real. Voters can also be targeted with high-quality video or audio that appear to show real candidates, but which were actually created by machines. Today, AI systems can quickly produce fake voices, images, and videos in seconds, and they can be created for little or no cost to the users. The tools, described as generative AI, have received wide attention since the launch of ChatGPT late last year. Technology experts say these kinds of AI tools can be used to invent false messages in a series of different forms. The material can then be published to social media services or fake online news websites. Such material can be effective because it can target specific groups of people. "We're not prepared for this," said A.J. Nash, vice president of intelligence at the internet security company ZeroFox. "To me, the big leap forward is the audio and video capabilities that have emerged," Nash told the Associated Press. AI experts have identified possible situations in which AI could be used to trick the voting public. Among these are AI-generated phone messages that seem to be in a candidate's own voice. Such messages could misinform voters about the correct voting date. Fake voice recordings could also be created to show a candidate admitting to a crime or expressing racist opinions. Video could also appear to show candidates giving a speech or comments they never gave. False images could be designed to look like local news reports that claim a candidate dropped out of the race. Former President Donald Trump, who is running for president in 2024, has shared AI-generated content with his followers. Recently, Trump shared a manipulated video of CNN News presenter Anderson Cooper on his Truth Social service. Another example of what AI tools can do is a campaign advertisement released last month by the Republican National Committee, RNC. The online ad came after Democratic President Joe Biden officially announced his re-election campaign. The ad began with an image of Biden and the words, "What if the weakest president we've ever had was re-elected?" The ad then showed a series of AI-created images. These included Taiwan under attack, closed businesses in the U.S., and soldiers and military vehicles driving down streets. RNC officials confirmed the use of AI in the ad, but other individuals or groups will likely develop and release such material in secret, said Petko Stoyanov. He is chief technology officer at Forcepoint, an internet security company in Austin, Texas. Stoyanov predicted groups aiming to interfere with U.S. democracy will employ AI tools and fake media material to reduce the public's trust. He gave the example of international organizations, overseas criminals, or states using AI tools to impersonate an American politician. In such cases, Stoyanov said, he is unsure U.S. officials or law enforcement could do anything about it. Legislation has been introduced in the U.S. House of Representatives to require candidates to identify campaign ads created with AI. Some states have offered their own proposals aimed at reducing the use of fake AI-generated content. AI is not necessarily needed, however, to create false or misleading audio, video, or written materials. However, New York Representative Yvette Clark said her biggest fear is that AI tools could be used before the 2024 election to create material that incites violence and turns Americans against each other. "It's important that we keep up with the technology," Clark told the AP. "People are busy with their lives and they don't have the time to check every piece of information. AI being weaponized in a political season, it could be extremely disruptive," she said. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn joins me now to talk more about his technology report. Thanks for being on the show today, Brian.
Of course, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
Your report dealt with fears that newly developed AI tools will make it easier for individuals or groups to share misinformation during the 2024 U.S. presidential election. This has long been a problem in past elections. How are these new tools expected to make things worse this time?
So the main reason technology experts are worried is that the new AI tools are much better at creating false messages in many different forms, and the tools can be used by anyone for little or no money. While such false messages have often been used in the past, they were more difficult to create and were generally not high quality, so they were easier for voters to identify as fake.
The report notes that we have already seen examples of these AI tools being used in politics, right?
Yes, that is correct. One example used was an AI-generated video produced by the Republican National Committee It was designed to show Democratic President Joe Biden in a bad light after he announced his reelection campaign. And one of his opponents in the race, former President Donald Trump, has also shared AI-created content with his social media followers.
The report also notes there are some legislative proposals in Congress that aim to limit damage from such tools being used in politics. How are those progressing?
Yes, actually, there are numerous proposed congressional measures, but political experts say it is unlikely any major bills have enough support from both sides to be passed into law before the next presidential election.
Okay, well, thanks again for being here today, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. Today, we tell about the Korean War. The biggest problem facing Dwight Eisenhower when he became President of the United States was the continuing conflict in Korea. Eisenhower was elected in November 1952. At the time, the United States had been helping South Korea fight North Korea for more than 2 years. About 20 other members of the United Nations were also helping the South. The UN members provided troops, equipment, and medical aid.
I shall go to Korea.
During the American presidential election campaign, Eisenhower announced that he would go to Korea. He thought such a trip would help end the war. Eisenhower kept his promise. He went to Korea after he won the election, but before he was sworn in as president. Yet the fighting did not stop in Korea until July of the next year, 1953. The war started when North Korean troops invaded South Korea. Both sides believed they should control all of the country. The dream of a united Korea was a powerful one. From 1910 until World War II, Korea had been under Japanese rule. In an agreement at the end of the war, troops from the Soviet Union occupied the North. They accepted the surrender of Japanese troops and set up a military government. American troops did the same in the South. The border dividing North and South was the geographic line known as the 38th parallel. A few years later, the United Nations General Assembly ordered free elections for all of Korea. With UN help, the South established the Republic of Korea. Syngman Rhee was elected the first president. On the other side of the 38th parallel, however, Soviet troops refused to let UN election officials enter the North. The Soviet Union supported the creation of a communist government there called the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Kim Il-sung was named premier. Five years after the end of World War II, the United States had withdrawn almost all of its troops from South Korea. It was not clear if America would defend the South from attack. South Korea had an army, but it was smaller and less powerful than the North Korean army. North Korea decided the time was right to invade. On June 25th, 1950, North Korean soldiers crossed the 38th parallel. The UN Security Council demanded that they go back. 2 days later, the council approved military support for South Korea. The Soviet delegate boycotted the meeting that day. If he had been present, the resolution would have been defeated. The UN demand did not stop the North Korean troops. They continued to push south. In a week, they were at the edge of the capital, Seoul. Harry Truman, America's president at that time, ordered air and sea support for South Korea. A few days later, he announced that American ground forces would also be sent. Truman wanted an American to command UN troops in Korea. The UN approved his choice, General Douglas MacArthur. Week after week, more UN forces arrived in the south. Yet by August, they had been pushed back to the Pusan perimeter. This was a battle line around an area near the city of Pusan in the southeast corner of Korea. North Korean forces attempted to break through the Pusan perimeter. They began a major attack on August 6th. They lost many men, however, and by the end of the month, they withdrew. The next month, General MacArthur directed a surprise landing of American Marines in South Korea. They arrived at the port of Incheon on the northwest coast. The landing was extremely dangerous. Water levels could rise or fall as much as 9 meters in a single day. The boats had to get close to the coastline and land at high tide. If they waited too long, the water level would drop and they would be trapped in the mud with little protection. The soldiers on the boats would be easy targets. The landing at Incheon was successful. The additional troops quickly divided the North Korean forces, which had been stretched from north to south. At the same time, UN air and sea power destroyed the Northern Army's lines of communication. On October 1st, South Korean troops entered North Korea. They captured the capital, Pyongyang. Then they moved toward the Yalu River, the border between North Korea and China. China warned against moving closer to the border. General MacArthur ordered the troops to continue their attacks. He repeatedly said he did not believe that China would enter the war in force. MacArthur was wrong. Several hundred thousand Chinese soldiers crossed into North Korea in October and November. Still, MacArthur thought the war would end by December 25th, the Christmas holiday. This was not to happen. The UN troops were forced to withdraw from Pyongyang. And by the day before Christmas, there had been a huge withdrawal by sea from the coastal city of Hongnam. In the first days of 1951, the North Koreans recaptured Seoul. The UN troops withdrew about 40 kilometers south of the city. They reorganized and 2 months later regained control of Seoul. Then the war changed. The two sides began fighting in an area north of the 38th parallel. They exchanged control of the same territory over and over again. Men were dying, but no one was winning. The cost in lives was huge. General MacArthur had wanted to enter China and attack Manchuria. He also had wanted to use nationalist Chinese troops against the communists. President Truman feared that these actions might start another world war.
If we do have another world war, it will be an atomic war. We could expect many atomic bombs to be dropped on American cities, and a single one of them could cause many more times the casualties than we have suffered in all the fighting in Korea. I do not want to be responsible for bringing that about.
When MacArthur disagreed in public with the president's policies on Korea, including the general's statement, "There is no substitute for victory," Truman dismissed MacArthur.
It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders, but the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual.
In June 1951, the Soviet delegate to the United Nations proposed a ceasefire for Korea. Peace talks began, first at Kaesong, then at Panmunjom. By November, hope for a settlement was strong. But negotiators could not agree about several issues, including the return of prisoners. The UN demanded that prisoners of war be permitted to choose if they wanted to go home. The different issues could not be settled after more than a year. Finally, in November 1952, the peace talks were suspended. Fighting continued during the negotiations. As it did, President Truman lost support. This was one reason why he decided not to seek re-election. The new president, Dwight Eisenhower, took office in January 1953. Eisenhower had campaigned to end the war. He was willing to take strong action to do this. Years later, he wrote that he secretly threatened to expand the war and use nuclear weapons if the Soviets did not help restart the peace talks. Such measures were not necessary. In a few months, North Korea accepted an earlier UN offer to trade prisoners who were sick or wounded. The two sides finally signed an armistice agreement on July 27, 1953. The agreement stopped the fighting and provided for the exchange of about 90,000 prisoners of war. It also permitted prisoners to choose if they wanted to go home. The war in Korea damaged almost all of the country. As many as 2 million people may have died, including many civilians. After the war, the United States provided hundreds of thousands of soldiers to help the South guard against attack from the North. Half a century has passed since the truce, yet Korea is still divided, and many of the same issues still threaten the Korean people and the world. The Korean conflict increased efforts in the United States to develop a weapon more deadly than the atomic bombs that had been used against Japan to end World War II. These efforts led to the hydrogen bomb. The Soviets were developing such a weapon, too. They had already developed and tested an atomic bomb. The 1950s found Americans at home feeling hopeful about the economic future while also living under the threat of nuclear war.
that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.